So we're picking up from where we left off on Wednesday's lecture. This is the second lecture in bonds and interest rates. And where we left off from Wednesday's lecture was with the set of so-called spot rates. These are the interest rates we use as our discount rates. We use the one-year spot rate to discount a promised cash flow 1 year into the future, the two-year spot rate to discount promised cash flows 2 years into the future, etc., etc. The set of spot rates generate the so-called yield curve for bonds of that particular credit quality. The yield curve, then, is our pricing rule. Now, is this all theory or what? Well, here is the Financial Times. I've gone into the markets data section on the Financial Times website, and I've gone into the area headed bonds and rates. What is this graph here? That's a yield curve. That is the yield curve for the UK. Oops. If you look along the horizontal axis, we have time going out into the future. 1 month, 3 months, 6 months. Then we start to look further afield, out as far as 30 years. Why are we able to look as far as 30 years out into the future? Because there are bonds issued on behalf of the UK government. They're known as gilts, and they have maturities stretching out as far as 30 years into the future. So that graph in front of your eyes, that's an example of a yield curve. So you should think of that graph as a set of dots, a set of points joined up to make a reasonably smooth curve. Those points represent the spot rates, 1 year, 2 years, etc. We can also think in terms of shorter term spot rates measured in a number of months. So this is real finance. This graph comes to us courtesy of the FT. This is the current yield curve for bonds issued on behalf of the sovereign UK government. So that's about as low risk as it comes. What I want you to notice, it's not always true, but currently in the UK, the yield curve slopes upwards. So the set of spot rates currently increases the further out in time we look. In other words, the interest rates currently that we should use to discount cash flows further and further out into the future, paid by bonds of this credit quality, those interest rates currently get bigger and bigger the further out into time we look. It is not always that way. Back to the slides then. At the end of the last lecture, having introduced spot rates, these are the discount rates, I also explained that we could do things differently. Sometimes it's more convenient to work with discount factors rather than discount rates. If the one-year spot rate is labelled R1, the one-year discount factor is 1 divided by 1 plus R1. If the two-year spot rate is labelled R2, the two-year discount factor is 1 divided by 1 plus R2, all squared. All of this we've known for some considerable time from probably the second lecture. So all of that was familiar. So where we are right now is we have two equivalent ways of coming up with a pricing rule. I can either state the pricing rule in terms of the spot rates, or equivalently, I can state the pricing rule in terms of the discount factors. There is a third way in which I can do it, and that involves forward rates, and that's what we're going to look at now. I think the best way to do this, however, is to look at the next slide and focus on this little cartoon. So, in this cartoon, I am standing today time zero. I'm looking out into the future. I'm looking out as far as T periods into the future. I've put one other marker down on my timeline, namely T minus one. So what I want you to think about then is the following. What discount rate would you use today to calculate present values when you're looking at a promised cash flow that's due T minus one periods from today? The answer is the T minus one spot rate. And there it is. So I'm associating that T minus 1 spot rate with this period out into the future. In exactly the same way, I associate the T period spot rate with this longer period. It's one period further into the future. All of that we know. What we need is a relationship between these two spot rates and the new concept, which I'm calling the forward rate. Now, as I've drawn it, this is a one-year forward rate. This one-year forward rate applies to this one-year period. Now, what I want you to consider is the following, and this is spelt out on the previous slide, so you can flick back between the previous slide and the diagram as you see fit. We are standing here today, time zero. We have a choice. What should we do? Should we invest in a bond that pays out T minus 1 periods into the future, and then reinvest the proceeds of that payout for one further year, taking us to this point, T periods into the future? Or should we lock ourselves in now by buying a bond that pays out T periods into the future? Two different investment strategies. They have to lead to the same payouts eventually, otherwise there's an arbitrage opportunity. So, the relationship between the spot rates and this so-called forward rate is driven by the principle of no arbitrage. How does that work then? For there to be no arbitrage, dare I attempt to use the pen? Will it work for me? Who knows? Let's see. For there to be no arbitrage, let's try up here and see if this works. Well, it wants to do it in black, but that'll have to do then. Think about investing £1 today in a T minus 1 period bond. That's going to grow to 1 plus RT minus 1 all to the power T minus 1. Oh, now it wants to go red. How clever. If we then roll that over for one more period at this so-called T minus 1 into T forward rate, it will grow further. It will grow by this additional factor. In order that there be no arbitrage opportunity, I must end up with the same proceeds as I would have had I decided now to invest in a T-period bond. If I don't end up with the same proceeds, there's an opportunity to make a riskless profit. And that's not allowed by the markets, at least not if everything is correctly priced. So the little cartoon is helping you to remember and hopefully understand the relationship between the T minus 1 spot rate, the T minus 1 into T forward rate, and the T spot rate. In other words, between RT minus 1, FT minus 1 into T, and RT. It's all terribly abstract sounding, but once we start to put some numbers in, you'll see that it isn't particularly abstract at all. If I go back to the previous slide, there I'm looking at the special case where I have a choice between investing in a one-year bond today and then rolling over the full proceeds for one further period versus investing today in a two-year bond. This relationship down here for the 1 into 2 forward rate is just a special case of the more general result which appears on the next slide. And I've written here in type and here in my own handwriting. You need to know that relationship. But you also have to understand one key fact. Contrary to what you might think, the forward rate is known today. All of the quantities that appear in this equation are known today. The two spot rates, we know. Why do we know them? Because they refer to today. Remember, the spot is wherever we are in time. Well, if today we know for sure what the T-1 spot rate and the T spot rate are, we must also know today what the forward rate is. So try to sew into your head the notion that forward rates are also known today. They're just another way of describing the situation. Sometimes it's more convenient to do our thinking in terms of forward rates. At other times, it's more convenient to do our thinking in terms of spot rates. We know both sets of numbers today for sure. If we go back to our earlier example from Wednesday, the one-year spot rate was 6%, the two-year spot rate was 7%, so we can use this relationship to deduce the 1:2 forward rate, and that's exactly what I'm doing here. So this is the sort of calculation you should be able to do for yourself. And the 1:2 forward rate turns out to be just a little bit greater than 8%. Here I've done the calculation using the spot rates, but I could equally well have used the discount factors. It's up to you which you use. Here is the relationship, the general relationship, in terms of spot rates. Here is the corresponding relationship instead of discount factors. You use whichever one you prefer. Most likely you'll be guided by the information you already have. Do you already have information about spot rates, or have you already proceeded to work out discount factors? It's your choice. I've carried on the calculation. So, going back to that example from Wednesday's lecture, I've now collected together in a table the following. We've got the three spot rates, 6%, 7%, and 8%. We've got the three discount factors, which we calculated in the last lecture. Excuse me, I did not mean to do that. This is not my best day, but never mind. We've got the three discount factors from the last lecture, so these are entirely consistent. That one-year discount factor is simply 1 over 1 plus the one-year spot rate. We did all of that in Wednesday's lecture. We've just worked out the 1:2 forward rate. Could you just convince yourself, take 30 seconds, could you convince yourself that the 2:3, the 2:3 spot rate, forward rate, I beg your pardon, is 9.02%. Could you just check that now? While you do that, I'll try and get this equipment to do what I want it to do. Said he, famous last words. So you're calculating the 2:3 forward rate. While I try to persuade the visualizer to wake up, and this is not going too well for me today. Never mind. Let's try once more. Don't know. I'll go back here. I don't want that either. That's better. That's it. Now, I can't get the visualizer to come on. I don't know what's wrong. Never mind. So here are the spot rates, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year. Here are the discount factors. I hope you agree with the calculation of the 1:2 and the 2:3 forward rates. Can you figure out how I've calculated the 1:3 forward rate? What about this one? What about this guy? How have I got the 1:3 forward rate? You need to go back to this result. And again, I'll have to rely on my board pen to work for me. The result on the screen is the way to calculate a one period forward rate. But if we want a two period forward rate, so if that period now is say T-2, then that forward rate is applying to a 2 year period, so I have to square it. That factor 1 plus the forward rate appears as a square. Of course, I'll have to make these consistent as well. So that's a bit better. At least it's decided now to write in red. So I'm feeling happier. the formula we have generalizes. It doesn't just apply to one period forward rates. It applies to forward rates that themselves refer to periods of any length. You just have to make sure you take proper care of the compounding, or if you prefer to call it discounting. So if this period is a 2-year period, so this is T minus 2 into T forward rate, it's applying for 2 years, we need to pick up a square there. And obviously this power drops from T minus 1 to T minus 2. So you now have the means of calculating 1-year forward rates, 2-year forward rates, etc., etc. Okay, so far so good. I now feel emboldened to draw something else on my diagram. Let me stick down here. I would rather do this on the visualizer, but the visualizer doesn't want to talk to me. So, let's try and sketch a little graph here. Oh good, it's partly in red when it wants to be. So that's going to be my time axis. And up the vertical, I'm going to draw some interest rates. I'm going to plot some interest rates. Okay. So, my 1-year spot rate, the table tells me, is 6%. So that's going to represent my 1-year spot rate. Let me label that R1. My 2-year spot rate is 7%. So I'm going to label this point R2. My 3-year spot rate is 8%. So that's going to sit there. That's time out into the future. And this is an interest rate at the moment. These are spot rates. I hope you're thinking to yourself, I know what he's just drawn. He's drawn the yield curve. He's drawn the yield curve implied by the prices of the bonds in the example we were looking at. It's a very odd yield curve in that the 3 spot rates all lie on a straight line. You've seen an example of a real yield curve. It's not a straight line. So this is a rather artificial example. Okay, so far so good. In my example, at least I can claim that the yield curve is increasing. Now, will I get a different colour? I really don't know. What colour is that going to be? I think that's black, so that's not much use to me, really. Perhaps I'll just stick with red. What about these forward rates, then? Well, the 1 into 2 forward rate, so the 1 into 2 forward rate is just above 8%. Now, the height of the 3-year spot rate was 8%, so that's just slightly up there. So I'm going to label that F12. By definition, this 1-year spot rate, I could also label it as F0 into 1. It's not terribly interesting to do that. So this point is both the 1-year spot rate and, if you like, the 0 into 1 forward rate. The 1 into 2 forward rate plots up here. What about the 2 into 3 forward rate? The 2 into 3 forward rate is this one, 10.03. So let's put that up here. So that's F23. Now what is it I want you to notice? I want you to notice 2 things. There's a yield curve sloping up. Never mind it's a straight line. That's just because the numbers I've chosen have been fiddled, if you like. And here is the forward rate. Now we have ways of labelling these in the industry. No surprise that we label that F for forward rate. This might be a bit of a surprise for you, because in the industry we label that one Z. Not because we can't spell spot, but because the spot rate, as I told you in Wednesday's lecture, is also the yield on a zero coupon bond of that particular maturity. So the Z reminds us about yields on zero coupon bonds. What do I want you to notice? I want you to notice that in this example, the forward rate curve lies above the spot rate curve. The mathematicians in the audience will hopefully have worked out for themselves that that's the reason why the spot rates themselves trend upwards. If you like, It's the forward rates that are pulling up the spot rates. So remember that particular configuration. A yield curve that's sloping upwards, together with a forward rate curve that sits above the yield curve, that sits above the spot rate curve. Ask yourself the following question. Must it always be like that? And the answer is no. The yield curve doesn't have to slope upwards the further out in time we go. The yield curve could slope downwards. For that to be true, ask yourself, where must the forward rate sit relative to the spot rates? And the answer is below the spot rates. So if instead the relationship between the forward rates and the spot rates, if instead the relationship has the forward rates plotting below the spot rates, in that circumstance the forward rate curve pulls the spot rate curve down. So what I'm trying to start you thinking about, and it's going to become useful later on in the lecture, what I'm starting to get you to think about is, how is the forward rate curve positioned relative to the spot rate curve? If the forward rate curve is above the spot rate curve slopes upwards. If the forward rate curve is below the spot rate curve slopes downwards. Just to make life even more interesting for us, it can do a bit of both. There can be parts of the term structure, as it's known, there can be periods out into the future where the spot curve, the yield curve, is sloping upwards, and other points, other parts of the term structure, where the yield curve slopes down. So in the simplest of circumstances, we have a yield curve that slopes upwards from left to right, or downwards from left to right. But in more interesting situations, we may have a yield curve that slopes upwards to begin with, but then slopes downwards and exhibits a humpback shape. Or we may have a yield curve that slopes downwards over the shorter maturities, but then slopes upwards, giving a U-shaped yield curve. What you need to be thinking about all the time is the shape of the yield curve is determined by how the forward rates sit relative to the spot rates. When the forward rates sit above the spot rates, they pull the yield curve up. When the forward rates sit below the spot rates, they pull the yield curve down. And more than one of these things can be going on if you're looking out as far as 30 years into the future. So that might help you to understand the shape of the yield curve from now on. Why do we bother with these different ways then of coming up with this pricing rule? Why didn't we just settle for the spot rates? Life presumably would have been more simple. Why did I have to complicate matters by also saying to you, you could do all of this in terms of discount factors, or, as I've now said, you could do all of this in terms of forward rates? Here's the answer. Spot rates make sense when what you're looking at are coupon-paying bonds. The spot rates are the discount rates to use to discount the various promised coupon payments out into the future. The discount factors make most sense when what you're looking at are zero coupon paying bonds. Do you remember what I called them at the end of last week's lecture? Strips. I told you that some of the bonds that are issued on behalf of the UK government are strippable. You can strip off the individual coupon payments. I pointed out to you then that the yield on such a zero coupon paying bond is the corresponding spot rate. So the yield on a 1 year zero coupon bond is the 1 year spot rate. I also pointed out to you that the discount factor gave you the price today of that zero coupon bond without doing any extra work. So the discount factors come into their own when the instruments you're looking at are zero coupon bonds. When do the forward rates come into their own? Answer, when you're looking at slightly more complicated instruments like futures contracts, forward rate agreements. In other words, the message is there are different markets out there in the world of fixed income, and depending on which market you're looking at, are you looking at the so-called cash market where the coupon-paying bonds are traded, in which case the spot rates are the most useful, form in which to couch the pricing rule. Are you looking in particular at zero coupon bonds, in which case the discount factors are probably the most useful measure? Or are you looking in the derivatives world? Are you starting to look at forward rate agreements or interest rate futures, in which case the forward rates are the most relevant? The key point for you to take away from this is all of these markets have to remain in alignment with one another, otherwise there's an arbitrage opportunity. So the absence of arbitrage that we exploited about 10 or 15 minutes ago to come up with that relationship between forward rates and spot rates, that arbitrage opportunity is really, that absence of an arbitrage opportunity is really saying something about how the different fixed income markets have to remain in alignment with one another. That's really what's going on. Okay. So how do we get this yield curve in practice? In the example we had in Wednesday's lecture, I pulled out of a hat a set of spot rates. 1 year spot rate was 6%, 2 year spot rate was 7%, 3 year spot rate was 8%, and we used those spot rates to check that a couple of bonds we had in our example were fairly priced. We also used those spot rates to establish that a third bond that came into our example was not correctly priced. The question now is, where did these spot rates come from in the first place? And the answer is the bond market. The bond market provides us with our observables. What are these observables? Answer: the prices of the different bonds that trade in the market. What we need to have is a subset of bonds that are traded in the bond market that we believe are correctly priced. Now, these are usually referred to as calibration bonds. In other words, there are some bonds out there that are so actively traded, so highly liquid, that we believe the market's prices of those bonds are correct and remain correct. No arbitrage opportunities to be found amongst those bonds. So that's like bond A and bond B in my little example in Wednesday's lecture. So the starting point for us in practice then is to observe the prices of a particular subset of bonds in the bond market, bonds that we believe are fairly priced. Let's imagine these three bonds fit the bill. So look what I've picked up for you. I've picked up a 1 year bond, a 2 year bond, and a 3 year bond. Why have I done that? Because I want to back out of these bond prices a 1 year spot rate, a 2 year spot rate, and a 3 year spot rate. And it won't come as any surprise to you that in order to go that far out into the future with my spot rates, I have to have bonds that live for that long out into the future. So that's why we've got a 1 year, a 2 year, and a 3 year bond. And I've picked these three examples. So the 1 year bond is actually a zero coupon bond in my example. And you should be thinking immediately, well, that doesn't half make life easy for us, because we by now know that the yield on a zero coupon bond is the same thing as the corresponding spot rate. So the yield on that 1 year zero coupon bond, that is the 1 year spot rate. No difficulty there then. No difficulty in getting our hand on the 1 year spot rate. Where does this information come from, by the way? This has come from the bond markets. As I said, we can observe the prices of these three bonds, and you already know that once you have the price, you automatically have the yield to maturity. We saw that early on in Wednesday's lecture. Once you know the price, the yield to maturity is implied, and vice versa. So you need to convince yourself that each of these prices, which we believe are fair prices, you need to do a little bit of work to convince yourself these are the corresponding yields to maturity. That's not a difficult calculation. All you have to do there is use either this number or this number or this number as the one-size-fits-all discount rate for the promised cash flows for this bond or this bond or this bond, and convince yourself that when you do that, you recover these three prices. So we've got a bit of a gift here to begin with. Because the first bond doesn't pay any coupon, Its yield, it's a one-year yield to maturity, is the same thing as the one-year spot rate. And that's what that says at the top of the next slide. So that was a bit of a gift. So we've now started to back out the spot rates. The one-year spot rate is 8.3%. Why? Because that is also the yield on that one-year zero-coupon paying bond. But remind yourself what a spot rate is. The one-year spot rate is the correct discount rate to use whenever you're looking at a promised cash flow 1 year into the future from any bond of the same credit quality as the first bond. The three bonds in my example are assumed to have the same credit quality. The issuer has the same credit rating. Remember, we generate yield curves from bonds all of the same credit quality. So this 8.3%, that is the discount rate to use whenever you're looking at a promised cash flow 1 year into the future. Well, there is another promised cash flow 1 year into the future, namely the first of the two coupons that the two-year bond pays. So now we know what discount rate to use to discount that first coupon payment for the two-year bond. It has to be 8.3%. That's the job of the one-year spot rate. What is it we don't know? The only thing we don't know is the two-year spot rate. But the two-year spot rate only impacts the promised cash flow 2 years from today for the two-year bond. Remember, the promised cash flow is one further payment of the coupon, that's the 8.5% of face, topped up by another 100% because these bonds all return their face value when they mature. So the only unknown now is the two-year spot rate, which we clearly can solve for because we know the price of the two-year bond. Now we've got two pieces of information. We've got the one-year spot rate and the two-year spot rate. We're starting to trace out the yield curve for this family of bonds, all of the same credit quality. I'll say it again. The one-year spot rate is the discount rate to use whenever you're looking at a promised cash flow 1 year from today. Well, the first coupon that the three-year bond pays fits that description. The two-year spot rate is the discount rate to use whenever you're looking at a promised cash flow 2 years from today. The second coupon that the three-year bond fits that description. So no surprise then that the first coupon payment on the three-year bond is discounting using 8.3% because that's the one-year spot rate. No surprise that the second coupon payment that the three-year bond makes is discounted using 9.24% because that's the two-year spot rate. Again, the only unknown is the three-year spot rate, and we can work out what that is because we know the price of the three-year bond. So, starting with these three market prices, the market price of bonds, the one-year, the two-year, and the three-year bonds, we can back out the corresponding spot rates. There is our term structure. One-year spot rate is 8.3%, two-year spot rate is 9.24%, three-year spot rate is 10.08%. And again, in this example, we find the yield curve slopes upwards. You should be asking yourself, why is that? And you know the answer. Because the forward rates, without doing any calculation, you know that the forward rates must be greater than the corresponding spot rates. So you should be thinking in your mind of a yield curve for these three spot rates coupled with a forward rate curve. The yield curve slopes upwards out as far as 3 years into the future. The forward rate curve must sit above that yield curve. So much for our example then. The question is, why does it work like this then? What determines the shape of the yield curve? Unless you form the wrong impression, I need to tell you that what makes the story more complicated is the yield curve doesn't stay fixed. When I draw a yield curve, that's a set of spot rates. That's a set of spot rates to use today. Let a few weeks or months pass, and the yield curve will change. It may move up, it may move down, it may change shape. It may become more curved, less curved. So the story is a dynamic story. It changes from time through time. Whenever we draw a yield curve, we're taking a snapshot in time. The yield curve is a set of spot rates, and the spot rates refer to a point in time that I'm labelling t equals zero. So two questions emerge. What determines the shape of the yield curve today? And what causes the shape of the yield curve to change through time? Now that's a complicated question to answer, and we can only begin to scratch the surface. It will come as no surprise to you when I tell you or remind you that prices in the financial markets are determined by an equilibrium that matches aggregate supply of something with aggregate demand for the same something. In the world of bonds and interest rates, what matters is what sort of participants are there in the market. In other words, how would we describe the sources of the financing versus the demand for that financing? Well, the sources of the financing might be short-term or long-term or a bit of both. Let me give you some examples. People like you and me, if we've got any spare cash, we might put it into a bank account. That's an example of a short-term deposit. So that's a source of short-term financing. If we have a job, we might contribute to a pension scheme. That's a source of long-term financing because we're planning for our long-term retirement. We might also be investing money in insurance contracts, life assurance contracts. None of us, I think, is planning to expire anytime soon. So again, that's long-term financing. And of course, in the world of high finance, both individuals, more likely institutions, are investing in long-term bonds. So there are examples of short-term financing and long-term financing, short-term sources and long-term sources. And so it is, and on the other side of the coin, in terms of who wants this money, the demand for financing. Individuals, and indeed organisations, may need short-term bank loans. Individuals, and indeed institutions, may want to buy property financed by a mortgage. Mortgages are typically long-term borrowing. So borrowing can be short-term or long-term. It can be in the form of unsecured bank loans or secured loans, e.g. a mortgage, where if you default on the payments, the interest payments, you have to give up the security, namely the house. So on both the sources of finance side and the demand for finance side, there are both short-term and long-term players. But the proportions of short-term and long-term varies through time. And it's the balance between them that determines the shape of the yield curve. So, what might make the yield curve slope upwards from left to right? Answer, if the lenders of finance, they are the sources, if the lenders of finance are mostly interested in lending short-term, but the demand for financing is mostly for long-term loans, then those lenders are going to have to be offered incentives to part with their money for long periods of time. What form will that incentive take? Answer, higher interest rates. So that would suggest to me an important reason why the yield curve would slope upwards. Those higher interest rates further out into time are capturing the need to offer a higher interest rate to incentivize the lenders to give up their money, not for 1 year or 2 years, but maybe for 5 years or 10 years. So the shape of the yield curve reflects the makeup of lenders versus borrowers in terms of, are they mostly short-term players or long-term players? Now that makeup itself changes through time. And that's why the shape of the yield curve changes through time. The shape of the yield curve at any point in time is what it takes to maintain an equilibrium between the makeup of short versus long-term financing and short versus long-term demands for financing. The next slide you can read for yourself. The only thing to write on this slide is you don't need to read any of this. I'm not suggesting that you should go away and read some of these papers in the published literature. What I am trying to signal to you with this slide is people have been thinking about these issues for a very long time. There are several theories or hypotheses of the term structure, and I just want quickly to sketch out what two of them are. We'll pick up with this in the next lecture because we had a late start, so we just need to spill over a little bit into the next lecture. But let me just set the scene, and then we'll finish this off at the beginning of the next lecture. What you need to know are two particular theories of the term structure of interest rates. One is called pure expectations. The other is called liquidity preference. I want you to notice what they have in common, and then I want you to see what's different between the two theories. I want you to notice that in both cases, there's a relationship between what we expect future spot rates will be, and we're looking at future spot rates because if we look at the timeline above, we're standing here at time little t, but we want to say something about this period between little s and big T, and that's in the future. In other words, we are standing at this point, little t in time. Close your eyes for a moment and imagine what the story will look like when we get to point little s. What will be the spot rate that applies at that point in the future, stretching out as far as big T? That's what this quantity is. Today, at time little t, we can only forecast that. We won't know what it is until we get to point little s. The pure expectations hypothesis is telling us what we should use as our forecast. We should use the corresponding forward rate. And I want to remind you that forward rates are rates, interest rates, that we know today. So here is a means of forecasting future spot rates. In other words, here is a means of forecasting the yield curve out into the future. What's the difference between the two theories? An extra term appears on the right-hand side in the liquidity preference hypothesis, and that's my job first thing on Wednesday to explain where does big L come from.